Hi, this is Steve Meyer, and I want to thank you for being a regular listener of the ID the Future podcast. We appreciate your interest in intelligent design and the work we're doing to develop the case for the theory of intelligent design. And I'd like to encourage you, if you find these broadcasts edifying, intellectually or otherwise, to become a regular financial supporter of the work of the Center for Science and Culture. You may know that we depend entirely on private donations. We don't get any federal money. We don't get government money for our scientific research program. And if you find the work that we're doing interesting, we'd be awfully grateful if you'd consider becoming a partner in that work by providing whatever you're able to ensure that that work goes forward.
Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast of the Center for Science and Culture. The following talk is by Casey Luskin, Research Director of the Center for Science and Culture. Casey will be discussing why the fossil evidence doesn't support the claim that humans evolved from ape-like precursors. This lecture was recorded at a recent Science and Human Origins conference. Here's Mr. Luskin.
So let's talk about the Australopithecines. With some of these very early hominid fossils, one of the reasons they're overhyped, again, is because we have so few of their bones. But the Australopithecines, we do have a pretty good number of their bones to have a good idea of what they looked like. And some people will claim that these were, again, upright walking, ape-like precursors of human beings. So let's talk about the Australopithecines and ask whether they really were ancestors to humans. So the word Australopithecus or Australopithecine literally means southern ape. It had the brain and a body about the size of a chimpanzee, and the most complete and most famous known skeleton of an Australopithecine is Lucy. Many of you probably heard of Lucy, you probably saw a picture of Lucy in one of your high school biology textbooks. Lucy's bones actually visited the Pacific Science Center in Seattle a few years ago and had the opportunity to go and see her bones. And they were protected under this really thick glass case. It was like you were looking at a holy relic or something like that. They had the Lucy Mobile that was going to transport her bones around. It was almost like people were going there to do ancestor worship. It was quite striking. But one of the things that struck me the most when I saw Lucy was how few of her bones we actually have. Only about 40, this is a drawing of Lucy's skeleton, only about 40% of her bones were recovered. And Lucy is one of the most complete pre-Homo hominid skeletons that we have, okay? So this is one of the best skeletons we have. And a huge proportion of her skeleton is missing. So again, some people will claim that Lucy was a direct ancestor of human beings. But when you dig into the technical literature, you find that of the vast majority of her traits were actually very much unlike humans and much more like modern apes than human beings. And here's some of the traits that when you look at the technical literature, you find were not like human beings and were actually ape-like. Her fingers. Now, you would think Lucy's fingers. Why is that a big deal? Well, Lucy had the finger bones of a knuckle-walking ape. That kind of doesn't fit very well with the hypothesis that she was an upright walking ape-like creature like you and I. We walk upright, but Lucy had the knuckle bones or the hand bones of a knuckle walking ape. So that's very significant. Her arms were like apes. She had the chest of an ape. She had a striding gait, which is the way that she ran that was more like an ape. Her shoulders, her abdomen, her inner ear canals were also more like apes. And again, you might think inner ear canals, why is that important? Well, if any of you have ever had an inner ear infection or a problem with your inner ear canals, you know that it can really mess up your balance. Inner ear canals has a very strong correlation with the mode of locomotion of an organism. And it turns out that Lucy had inner ear canals that were more like an ape and not like a human being that walks upright. So that is very significant for understanding that Lucy might not have been an upright walking creature. Her developmental patterns were more like an ape. She had the feet like an ape and teeth, and also her brain size was more like an ape. So this is all very significant for understanding that Lucy, in my opinion, was much more like an ape and really was an ape and was not something that looks like precursor to modern human beings. This is a quote from an article in the Journal of Molecular Biology and Evolution. It says, "No gradual series of changes in earlier Australopithecine populations clearly leads to the new species, early Homo, and no Australopithecine species is obviously transitional. Here on the right-hand side, we have a reconstruction of Lucy showing her walking upright, although I think there are some good reasons to doubt this. And on the left, we have an early member of Homo. This is Homo erectus, which in many respects looks almost identical to us below the neck. We'll get into this more in just a moment. Brain size is slightly smaller than ours, but well within the range of modern human variations. So we don't see an Australopithecine species that is transitional to modern humans. And I think there are reasons to even doubt this reconstruction of Lucy walking upright like that. Another article said that prevailing views of Lucy's posture are almost impossible to reconcile. To resolve such differences, more anatomical fossil evidence is needed. The available data at present are open to widely different interpretations. So basically, we don't have enough evidence from Lucy's bones to know for sure whether she walked upright or not. It's not conclusive that she was an upright walking ape-like creature. This is a great quote from Leslie Aiello, who was an anthropology professor at the University College London. She said, "Australopithecines are like apes, and the Homo group are like humans. Something major occurred when Homo evolved, and it wasn't just in the brain." So this is a very significant observation that Australopithecines, they are like apes, and there was something major that happened when humans, or the genus Homo, appeared in the fossil record. And that something major was the abrupt appearance of our genus and human-like species or human-like specimens in the fossil record. So I would call this a Big Bang origin of Homo. So let's talk about this real quick. Some have cited Homo habilis as a possible link between the Australopithecines and our genus Homo. Is that really a good position to hold? Well, here's an article from the journal Nature that said that the habilis skull represents an unlikely intermediate between the morphology seen in the Australopithecines and Homo erectus. Here's an article from the journal Human Evolution. It is difficult to accept an evolutionary sequence in which Homo habilis, with less human-like locomotor adaptations, is intermediate between Australopithecus and fully bipedal Homo erectus. This latter article here in the Journal of Human Evolution studied many of the bones of Homo habilis and found that really it is less human-like than the Australopithecines. So how could it be a candidate for being an intermediate? So the skeleton of habilis was actually more similar to living apes than were other Australopithecines like Lucy. So you might be asking, if it looked more like living apes than Lucy did, why is it a member of our genus Homo and Lucy isn't? Isn't that kind of weird? Well, this goes back, I think, to a lot of interpretation. Taxonomic categories, when we classify an organism as a member of the genus Homo or a member of the genus Australopithecus or Ardipithecus or whatever, these are human constructs. These are human categories that we've created, and we often lump things together because of our preconceptions, not because I think of what the evidence is really saying. And they wanted to lump Homo habilis here because they thought they found, I believe, some tools and some fire associated with Homo habilis, but that kind of evidence is very tenuous. It's very difficult to say that this bone is directly linked to this tool or this fire pit or something like that. Very, very difficult to make those kinds of connections. So is Homo habilis really a link? Just looking at its bones, this was an article, a major review article by two leading paleoanthropologists in the journal Science a few years ago. And they looked at many aspects of the Homo habilis skeleton, its body size, body shape, mode of locomotion, its jaws and teeth, its development and its brain size. And they found that in every single case, it belonged with an Australopithecus rather than Homo. So if you look here, the A's mean it belongs with Australopithecus. The H's mean it belongs with Homo. Homo habilis belongs with the Australopithecine apes. And you can see here that there are members of the genus Homo that clearly are Homo, and there's members of Australopithecus that are clearly Australopithecus. There's only one single item on this diagram that was classified as intermediate, and that's the brain size of Homo erectus. We'll get back to that in just a moment here, because really brain size I don't think is very helpful in understanding a human evolutionary sequence. But we'll come back to that really soon. So Homo habilis belongs with the Australopithecines. It is not a good candidate for being a link between Australopithecus and Homo. So talking about the origin of the genus Homo in the fossil record, we find some really striking quotes from evolutionary scientists actually admitting that when our genus Homo appears in the fossil record, it appears abruptly without evolutionary precursors. So here's a quote from a paper in the Journal of Molecular Biology and Evolution. It says, "Early Homo sapiens was significantly and dramatically different from Australopithecines in virtually every element of its skeleton and every remnant of its behavior." Here's one of my favorite quotes. This is a quote from three Harvard paleoanthropologists, who were writing about the origin of the genus Homo in a book a couple years ago. And they talk about the good news and the bad news for evolutionary scientists when looking at the fossil record. They say the transition from Australopithecus to Homo was undoubtedly one of the most critical in its magnitude and consequences. Well, yeah, of course, because this is, we're talking about the origin of human-like fossils, okay? So it says, as with many key evolutionary events, there's both good news and bad news. First, the bad news is that many details of this transition are obscure because of the paucity of the fossil and archaeological records. Okay, we kind of already knew that, but that's a nice admission to see that this key transition, when the human-like members of the genus Homo first appeared in the fossil record, that in and of itself is obscured by a poor fossil record. So what is the good news? The good news is this. They say, although we lack many details about exactly how, when, and where the transition from Australopithecus to Homo occurred, we have sufficient data from before and after the transition to make some inferences about the overall nature of the key changes that did occur. Did you see that? The good news is that we lack details about how, when, and where the transition to human-like members in the fossil record arose. I mean, if that's your good news, that's not very helpful for them. So in other words, here's what we have here. The fossil record provides the ape-like Australopithecines before and the human-like members of Homo after, but not fossils documenting a transition between them. So in the absence of intermediates, we're left with a situation where we have inferences of a transition based upon strictly the assumption of evolution. We don't actually see an evolutionary transition from ape-like creatures to human-like individuals in the fossil record. We don't see that evidence. We have to infer it based upon our evolutionary assumptions. This is another great quote from the great evolutionary biologist Ernst Mayr. He was one of the architects of the modern evolutionary synthesis. He died a couple years ago, but in 2004, he said, the earliest fossils of Homo are separated from Australopithecus by a large unbridged gap. How can we explain this seeming saltation? That basically means a jump in the fossil record. He says, not having any fossils that can serve as missing links, we have to fall back on the time-honored method of historical science, the construction of historical narrative. I guess that means you're sort of just inferring things based upon your worldview and your paradigm without any evidence. So that's how I interpret this.
This lecture was recorded at a Science and Human Origins conference in the fall of 2014. The conference featured John West, Casey Luskin, Anne Gager, and Rick Sternberg talking about the fossil, genetic, and social issues surrounding the debate over human origins. We will be featuring these speakers on future episodes of ID the Future. For more information, please visit idthefuture.com. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.